Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletail from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Washington, D.C. is John Rigi. John spent nearly 30 years as a highly decorated veteran of the FBI and currently serves as a senior advisor for cybersecurity and risk for the American Hospital Association and their 5,000 plus member hospitals. John, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks, Adam. It's great to be here today.
Great to have you. And we're going to be discussing cyber risk, not surprising given your background. So let's start with something that was in the press a lot a few months ago, a little less recently, which is ransomware. Lately, the headlines are less frequent, but has the risk been reduced?
That's a great question, Adam. Yes, I agree. It does appear, again, with the emphasis on the word appear, that there seems to be less incidents of ransomware. But there could be a lot of factors for that, and including less reporting. Some of the cyber forensic firms have reported actually an increase in crypto malware, basically where malware mines for digital currency on a network in favor of ransomware. But I have to tell you, Adam, though, ransomware can still be devastating to a hospital, so the guard still has to remain high.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not one of the only risks out there. Even whether it's increased, decreased gunware, whatever, you know, we can't just assume everything's fine. So what are some of the other key external risks that organizations need to be prepared for in order to defend themselves?
Right. So I just mentioned crypto hijacking. And that one, I think really that threat fluctuates with the value of cryptocurrency. But a big one is supply chain attacks, basically where the cyber bad guys, the adversaries, attempt to penetrate a vendor's networks, products, or services as a means or a pathway to attack the main target. So they infect the vendor with malware and then hoping that the vendor will then infect the main target, the hospital, for instance.
Isn't that what happened, by the way, with the Target case? It started out with, I think, a point of sale?
That's exactly the classic example. In fact, it was an HVAC vendor that had network access plugged in to Target's network, and the very sophisticated adversary had mapped out who had access to Target's network, infected this vendor. This vendor then delivered malware that infected the point of sale terminals.
Fascinating.
It's an effective, unfortunately, tactic. So we're seeing that, and especially when it comes to medical devices, potentially, hospitals really need to be on guard as they take in medical devices, because those could have a direct impact on patient safety and care delivery. Business email compromises. This is another huge moneymaker for cyber bad guys. You know, in these type of cases, the cyber adversaries attempt to penetrate or impersonate the emails of officials within an organization that have payment authority. So a lot easier than trying to deliver malware into an organization, identify where the key data is, exfiltrate the data, and then try to monetize it on the dark web. Here, they insert an email at the right time, perhaps, and divert a pending legitimate payment to their own account. Big losses, looking at something here, it says in 2017, the FBI reported $675 million in losses related to business email compromise, and only reported losses of $2.3 million related to ransomware. But again, the issue is the impact on an organization, especially a hospital, to deliver care. So ransomware, even though the dollar losses are less, has a much greater impact on the ability of the hospital to deliver care to patients.
Now, on that business email example you're giving, that's the case where, for example, let's say the company is an employee gets a note that looks like it comes from the CEO. It's got his name and the at, and then the company name, but like the company name is just off slightly. There's an L instead of a one, those kinds of things. Is that what you're talking about?
That's correct. That's one method of perpetrating a business email compromise, what's called spoofing. So they impersonate the email of a legitimate person with inside the organization. That's fairly common. And again, unless the staff is paying close attention, they may end up miswiring funds off into the bad guys' accounts. But the other, and I think the more malicious and insidious method, is that they actually penetrate the legitimate email, organizational email, by compromising the credentials or guessing the passwords, and then conducting surveillance within the email traffic and identifying a transaction, payment transaction, which is pending. And at the right time, they insert their own email and misdirect the payment to their account. So to counter that, we always recommend that organizations use multi-factor authentication for their emails systems. And whenever there seems to be a change in wiring instructions, the best thing to do is pick up the phone, get verbal authentication before that money's sent.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like in some things, paper may still be better. Now, any defense for these issues is going to involve training workers to avoid falling prey to bad actors, you know, knowing what to look for, how to get, when it's time to get double checking. What should employees be trained in? I mean, what's the best way to get them focused on these issues?
So a lot of training focuses on training the staff to recognize phishing emails, which still remains the most common methodology to deliver malware into an organization. So identifying, again, suspicious emails which may have an unexpected attachment or a link that the email is requesting that you click on. So that's one of the things, very common. And a lot of organizations employ what they call phishing tests. So they will send out their own phishing emails to try to understand how many employees, the percentage of employees that are clicking on those suspicious attachments or links, and then sending folks for retraining or creating additional awareness. But I tell you, in the hospital, in the healthcare environment, I think you have to do more than that, because ultimately that just becomes a compliance-based type program. Ultimately, you have to really create that top-down culture of cybersecurity, really leveraging that patient care culture, which already exists within healthcare, and having the staff understand that integrating cybersecurity as part of their patient care culture is really what's important in protecting the patients, not only from potential physical harm, but also protecting their data.
It sounds a lot like, you know, a lot of ways it's moving just from a sort of an intellectual approach to an emotional one as well, which I got to say from my advertising days rings very powerfully, because we used to always say you want to hit them in the heart and the head, and that's a great way to do it. Now, for all the challenges of, you know, bad actors from the outside trying to make their way in, a large part of the breaches are caused by simple human error. Things like terminals left unguarded, lost flash drives, stolen laptops and mobile devices. What else should healthcare providers be doing to prevent these kinds of issues from coming up? I mean, again, it's always going to happen. Even the best training isn't going to protect against somebody eventually just misplacing something. But what works best for getting employees to be more aware of these issues?
Yeah, I think, again, increased training for the staff, making them aware how sensitive this data is for the patients, and leveraging that culture of patient safety. And for the management of hospitals, especially understanding that although there may be higher incidence of data loss related to internal actions, whether malicious or non-malicious, they still have to keep in mind that the vast majority of records are stolen by external hackers. So in other words, shouldn't be diverting resources from external defenses to internal.
So let me close this by asking you to look down the road. I mean, when it comes to cyber stuff, breaches, incidents, we seem to often be catching up with what the latest things are that the bad actors are up to. You know, looking to the threat landscape a year or two from now, what should organizations be doing now to start protecting themselves?
Well, that's another great question, because I think the attack surface will fortunately and unfortunately expand in the next year and the coming years. I say fortunately because the introduction of technology to improve patient care and the delivery of care will expand dramatically for such things such as telehealth and expanded use of connected medical devices and even wearables reporting patient vital signs. So these are all great things which will definitely improve patient outcomes, but organizations need to look at potential cyber risk upfront, incorporate concepts of security by design at the front, and try to understand how that this new technology, although valuable and necessary, does increase cyber risk exposure. Also, there will be additional requirements probably for sharing of the electronic health record amongst all the providers in a particular case so they can receive reimbursement in the form of value-based payments or bundled payments. So it is incumbent upon hospitals and providers to understand how that electronic health record is being shared and understand that the record may be at risk every time it's shared unless proper protections are put in place. So technology sharing.
Go ahead. Yeah, and along those lines, you know, looking at what you're talking about now, what you discussed earlier about malware coming in through third-party stuff, whether it's from a medical device or from a vendor who's integrated in your system. Bottom line is, it sounds like for anyone involved in compliance, IT security, you have to realize that when it comes to protecting your data, you can't just look at your own systems, but you got to look at the ecosystem that you're a part of.
That's exactly right, Adam. And you may have cyber risk, which you will absorb, which is beyond your control. For example, if you're providing for a single vendor for a mission-critical function like medical transcriptions or your EMR, or even for your internet service without redundancy, you will be exposed to whatever cyber risk they have.
Well, scary thoughts, but good cautions, and hopefully good guidance that people will be able to take back and help navigate themselves through this issue in the future. Well, John, thank you for sharing so many insights. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.